Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively, happily back out on the trail watching football all day on my couch on Sunday and counting my Ravens scratch-offs. I got the new, they're kind of shiny and shimmery. I kind of dig that a little bit. Maybe it's a new helmet color for them or a new scheme as we go blackout on Monday night. Luke Jones joins us now. You and I went away for a couple days. Anybody follows me out on social media knows I was running around with Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey and Steven Tyler and Joe Perry and Lord knows whoever else and Show hey, amongst other things this weekend. But Monday Night Football is something, and the Lions coming in, last game of the weekend, exciting day all the way around. Even Joe Flacco got a victory, and some surprises. And we see the Chiefs next week and seeing what they did and all that. Dude, I'm out in Phoenix and I'm on a shuttle. Actually, I was in one of those driverless cars. I did a Waymo in Phoenix, did several of them. We kind of liked it in some sort of safer way, thinking like the machine could drive better than a person. And I'm in the back seat with my wife, and I saw your thing on Matavike when, like Thursday, Friday, camp sort of opens up for the weekend a day late because they're playing Monday night. Now we're going to have this short week, no matter how it goes on Monday night. Luke, this Matavike thing is, I said to my wife, I'm sitting in the Waymo, and I'm like, this isn't good. Where did this come from? And I say that on the other end of watching like the Cleveland Browns front four dominate again and thinking like how important the run stop is.
Yeah, no question about that. And it's a concern. And as you and I are preparing to watch the Ravens, everyone's preparing to watch the Ravens take on the Lions Monday Night Football. It's exciting, national TV game, really important game, knowing you're going to Kansas City next week, and not even just viewing that through a daunting lens as much as a chance of, hey, you've got a chance to make the Chiefs 1-3. They weren't exactly impressive, even taking care of the Giants, especially in that first half, which was PU'd. Bad football on both sides, but this was, this Matabike neck injury. There wasn't anything that came out of the game in terms of like you see this play where he calls a trainer over or he's down on the field. I think he played all the way through the next to last drive of the game, which if you recall was garbage time. I mean, Cleveland even put in, replaced Joe Flacco, put in the rookie quarterback Gabriel, and the Ravens had some of their backups in. Even having reviewed the game, there wasn't necessarily any specific play where you say, oh my gosh, that might have been where it was. I mean, he had kind of an awkward block on Roquan Smith's fumble return for the touchdown. But that said, he played at least a couple more plays after that. And that was, what, midway through the fourth quarter. So a lot of times when you're talking about something of this nature, it can be something that doesn't pop up till the next day, and maybe the next day a player wonders, hey, maybe I just slept on my neck funny, whatever. In the way that we all have that happen, as you get older,
I have felt that way for the last 6 months, but that, all things aside, once it happens and your neck feels funny, you never know when it's not going to feel funny.
Sure, exactly. And, as I say it in jest, when I feel like I wake up twice a month with a jacked up
But
neck because
dude,
I slept funny.
taking on
But
physical contact in a National Football League game on
that's a
Monday night
different
against the
animal.
Detroit Lions, that's a whole different. Just holding my head up to like talk to you on the screen some days can be a challenge,
Yeah, but obviously we're talking about something that sparks way more concern when we're talking about an individual who's one of the best defensive tackles in the league, someone who was paid lucratively just a couple years ago, 4 years, $98 million contract, a two-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle. And so he missed Thursday's practice. One missed practice with a neck issue, that's not necessarily something that raises an alarm right away. I mean, lots of guys miss practices for a neck strain, a little bit sore, whatever. But come Friday, when he misses practice again, you start to hear some whispers. And look, when you're a reporter, you hear whispers and rumors and online chatter and all kinds of stuff. And 98.5% of the time, it's stuff that, isn't reputable, right? Or it's something that, even if it was reputable, it ends up not necessarily being the case,
Well,
in
for our
terms of.
audience and for our sake, we aim way higher than that.
Sure.
Right, you know, over 27 years, if we're reporting something, or if you're saying it's serious, or I'm saying it's serious, it's to the point where we're putting our reputation with the
Sure.
fact that it's not a rumor anymore. It's more trusted than that. And this is a deeply concerning conversation about one of their highest paid players at this point in the season, where the alarm's kind of gone off a little bit, right?
Yeah, no question. Well, especially as it pertains to this week, when or the at least the short term, Kyle Van Noy's out with a hamstring, you know, for at least this game, probably another game or two after that, right? So you're really in a position with the pass rush where there are some question marks. And in the case of Madubike, I mean, let's face it, when we're putting the whole front together, we tend to focus on the edge rushers. Madubike is their best pass rusher. I mean, overall, he's the guy that, you know, but can makes this thing go. You know,
Well, the
Travis Jones.
scoreboard is look what they pay him.
Sure, right, and you know,
Even if you
Travis.
don't know much about football, you know that at one point they really liked him, and they've always liked him. I mean, from the minute he came, he shined in a little bit of a way that had some Haloti Ngata in him, but didn't come with that draft price, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a third round pick, but I mean, you're talking about someone who led all NFL interior defensive linemen was in sacks 2 years ago, right? So we're going to see how this plays out. He obviously is not playing on Monday night. John Harbaugh ruled him out even before the injury report came out, but you know, he was very not wanting to share too much, but when he's saying he came up with some symptoms after the game, nothing specific in the game where we saw the injury actually happen. But they're dealing with the symptoms. They're running through tests. He's going to be ruled out, and they're going to try to get to the bottom of it. He declined to say whether Madubike is an option to go on injured reserve, but that's certainly something that is being talked about. And when I say that, I don't say that just in the terms of, oh, well, he misses four games and he's totally fine. So we're going to find out. And maybe over the weekend they got some better news on how he's feeling, but we're dealing with a neck injury here. When you talk about the neck, when you talk about the head, knowing how brutal this football game is, knowing that the Ravens' current defensive coordinator could quite possibly still be playing in an alternate timeline, and has been retired for 8 years because of now it was more of a congenital neck, you know, spine condition for Zach Orr, but we know how serious that can be. So this is clearly something where they're going to err on the side of caution until they absolutely know what they're dealing with here. And, you know, that we also know what this could mean in terms of, and look, I'm not, let me be clear, when I bring up Zach Orr, that's not me saying that.
Well, I was going to say, you didn't bring him up. I was going to bring him up because you and I went through this, and we like Zach. We knew Zach. We take Zach. Zach was a hell of a player and had it taken away from him right
Yeah.
before he got paid, right? And in this particular case, to your point, motor functions and pain and football pain and the kind of condition you need to be in to play the game. And when doctors are checking you out and shaking their head, Leanne Curl gets up on you and shakes her head. I mean, that's who I always looked at anytime there's an injury on the field, is I look at the doctors and see what their reaction to all of it is. And if the doctors are saying he can't play and it's neck related, Zach Orr would be where we all look and say that's what can happen. That's what
Yeah.
can happen. And thankfully for him, he's upright, he's alive, he's got a great job, he's got a good gig, he's coaching these guys. But he's also in the room with these guys. And when they're having these kinds of physical trauma, I would think there's a different kind of emotional intelligence in regard to Zach Orr. I would
Yeah.
think that.
Well, and I also think anyone who's just been around the game, you know, whether you're talking about coaches and you think back to their playing careers, I mean, I think anyone who's played the game long enough has had a link to that in some way, whether it was a player with a season, you know, season-ending injury, a career-ending injury, you know, heaven forbid situations where, you know, I mean, we know players have been paralyzed, right? So even if it's just a scare, you know, even if it's someone carted off on a backboard, but all things end up being totally fine, I think anyone who's been tied to the game of football understands just how seriously you have to treat those things. Now, let's also be clear. This is not me saying that's going to happen with Madubike, that he's out, you know, that he's going to be definitively out for the year or his career's in danger. But
the point is you have to be very, very careful with these types of things. This is not like, oh, you try to play through a bum ankle, right? You try to you harness up a shoulder and try to play through it, right? There's no
I remember
playing
Peter
through
Boulware
something.
playing with one arm for a
Yeah.
year, right?
Yeah. So, but this is different when you're talking about something like this. And to be clear, there's a range of outcomes here. I mean, I can remember Tavon Young had a season-ending neck injury and had a surgery, and then he was back the following year, right? So there's all types
Kid
of
from
different
Buffalo
possible.
almost died and he's back on the field. So,
So, but you just want to be careful, and you need to be smart. And again, you know, I've had the question a few times from some fans that, you know, it's a fair question, you know. What happened during the game? Why wasn't this caught during the game? Why wasn't this identified during the game? And the reality is, when you're talking about football players banging around, having mini car crashes on every play, there's lots of things that a player might feel or might not feel, quite frankly, that may only surface the following morning.
well, this is why
Or,
doctors watch them and pull them out of games, right?
yeah, exactly. But it's also, you know, there are also times where there isn't the proverbial smoking bullet, right? That of, oh, this is definitively where it happened. No, you might not know, right? So
Well,
we're going to
everybody
see.
wants to play doctor on the internet. I mean, at the
Sure.
end of the
Oh,
day,
and people have,
from a
and people are
football
concerned.
perspective, people want to bet on it. They want to know what's playing. From a humanity standpoint, we talk about these people as people because I've spent enough time around them to know that they are people and they're not rotisserie players or digitally created AI creatures. They have to be ready to play. And I guess for this particular team at this point in this defense, the inflection point of the 1-2 Kansas City Chiefs waiting in the wing and the Lions waiting to play, you'd rather have Justin Madubuike, or do we call him Nnamdi? I want to be
Nnamdi.
respectful. Nnamdi, okay,
Nnamdi,
because
yeah.
we have called him both. My bad. We just call him Madubuike, kind of like a Japanese sumo wrestler, just one name, like Ichiro or Otani, who I saw last week. But in the case of Madubuike, this is a huge loss for the team.
Sure.
In the near short term, whether it's Rams game, just whether it's any point this year to think like you're going to pick that productivity up from a football perspective. And we can talk more about the humanity of it and where they are. He might be playing 3 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now. I don't know, but he's not playing Monday night.
Right. And you do bring it back to a football perspective because that there's also that part of it, right? I mean, that the game goes on, right? I mean, but you've seen that so many different times with guys, whether it's a 3 week injury or whether it's a season ending injury. So this is a concern, right? I mean, this is a Detroit offense, as we're talking about tonight's game, that certainly is explosive, has among might be the deepest collection of skill, offensive skill talent they'll see. You know, certainly one of the deepest groups in the National Football League. And I'm talking about that in terms of, I mean, the way they can beat you running the football. They have two standout running backs. Jahmyr Gibbs is one of the very best playmakers in the league out of the backfield. David Montgomery can still hurt you running between the tackles. So you have Madubuike out of the picture for tonight. You have Kyle Van Noy out of the picture, and you're relying on younger edge players. You know, you're going to see more Mike Green. You're going to see more Tavius Robinson. Odafe Oweh, of course, is already a starter or a guy that's established, but you're asking for more from him. David Ajabo is going to be active. No, I'm not saying he's going to play a whole lot, but you kind of look, you need a rotation of at least four, generally speaking.
Now, there's a guy we've
So,
been talking about him for years and years, right?
yeah, well, there's another guy, though. I mean, to bring it back to, you know, there's a human side to it as well, but he's just missed so much time with injuries, right? I mean, he coming out of Michigan, he was perceived to be a very talented upside kind of prospect, but also a raw prospect. And when you tear your Achilles at your pro day, now the Ravens knew about that part, and that's why he fell to the second round, right? He wouldn't have been a second round pick had that happened. But when you tear your Achilles before your rookie year and you play and practice sparingly as a rookie, and then year two, you have an ankle slash knee injury that costs you most of year two. I mean, that's a lot of time on task that you've lost. That's just so much development time that you've lost that, you know, that he just hasn't developed. Now, you know, maybe Kyle Van Noy being out these next couple games
Well, I was
gives him
going to
an
say, we haven't
opportunity
seen
and
him not play capably. He hasn't played much, right? Like it hasn't been like he's been in there and been overwhelmed and been all like I don't. They win a lot of football games, and these fringe guys, these Ben Clevelands. I mean, talk so much about McCary in the offensive line, and he played. So there is a report card on him, you know, and you could say, well, Cleveland played a couple snaps here and again. It was fine. It was okay. Not good enough to start. Not good enough to displace lower ranking members of the starting 22 or 32 or however many you would call starters in such a hybrid defense. But there is a point where these names that exist, like I saw TJ Tampa make a play last week, and I'm like, Tampa, it's more than a place. Look at that. We got Tampa, we got Cleveland. But I'm just saying, seeing these guys make plays in real games, not you seeing them run around and scout or watching them run around in these preseason, whatever the mess they are. But like in games, seeing someone not succeed, Simpson, you know, seeing guys get demoted last year, Marcus Williams, whatever, seeing guys get playing time and can't do it is different than. Then, you know, I felt that way about Tyus Bowser a little bit. I just felt like there were some guys that, like, I never saw him on the field because he never earned it in Owings Mills, but I never saw that they really couldn't do it. They just really never did it. And Ojabo feels a little bit like that to me. Like, I haven't seen him scuffle and think that guy sucks. I know he's been injured. He hasn't been out there. But to your point, this is a chance to shine. I mean, this is as good as he's going to get, as healthy as he's going to be, as. And now he has an opportunity. He's going to get snaps.
Well, and he's also in the final year of a rookie contract, so there's that as well. But I mean, see, the thing with Ajabo, and I hear your point, and I agree to an extent, but I mean, he did appear in 13 games last year. He did play 275 defensive snaps. Now, that's not a huge role, but it's a role when you're out there. And he also had some games where he was a healthy scratch because what doesn't help him is he's a backup and he doesn't play special teams. So that kind of, you know, I remember 15 years ago, we talked about Paul Kruger in those terms, you know, being a backup who didn't play special teams. And you kind of would look at certain game days, and if you had a need, you'd say, "Well, I'm sorry, man. Like you're fourth or fifth in the pecking order. You need
Well,
to play teams."
I'm an old guy. If we're going to celebrate 30 years of this, this speaks to Ed Hartwell and Bart Scott and Matt Judon and guys that were dogs for a minute and got paid, unlike an Anthony Levine who hung around forever and was a dog, and you know the Benny Thompsons of the world that become that kind of player. But it is an opportunity to the next step, and it's a way to stay on the team, and it's a way to when someone gets hurt. Get on the field more quickly. I just, the Ojabo thing, you brought him up, dude. Michigan, his brother. I'm watching Harbaugh's brother win games out in LA, by the way, too. So, you know, there's something formidable that's come out of me sitting here watching football all day on Sunday. But the Ojabo thing, I really want to see the kid shine because I thought, like, I followed his story when he was injured and I thought, this is kind of an interesting Raven steal. You know, grab a guy, put him away for a year, bring him back. Brother approved, you know, all of that. You know, I'd like to see him make a play or make a big play, you know what I mean? And say, hey, there he is. It took him this long. Look at what that guy's been through.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a nice kid. I mean, it's a good story. You know, Nigerian born, and you know his story, you know, at Michigan,
He didn't
and
play football as a kid, right?
yeah. So,
Yeah.
but at the same time, you know, this is year four. You know, he missed a ton of time his first couple years. Last year, he was mostly healthy, but just didn't do much. So, I mean, the reality is, Nestor, I'm not sure he'd be on the 53-man roster if Adisa Isaac didn't dislocate his elbow in that Dallas preseason game. I mean, that's just a simple reality of it. So I don't, again, I don't want, I think this is much more about, hey, Owe needs to do, you know, he a little bit of a quiet start for him the first two games. He needs to stand out, right? I mean, he had 10 sacks last year. Like, it's go time. You don't have Van Noy out there. They need you.
And Mike
T
Green, right?
Tavius Robinson, and the big one's Mike Green, right? I
Right.
mean, second round pick. You know, I think he quietly has done some nice things the first couple games. You know, he's had some reps where you look at him. You know, he had a quarterback hit on Flacco last Sunday, but that's where you're kind of looking at. And let's be clear. I mean, I'm not, you know, Kyle Van Noy's not Lawrence Taylor, but when you're talking about a position that is one of the relative questions on your football team, right? When you're trying to stack up the Ravens roster on either side of the ball, we talk about the offensive line. on the offense. And on defense, we talk about edge rusher, the pass rush in general, and we talk about safety depth, I mean, behind the two starters. So when you lose Van Noy, at least for this game, if not for another game or two after that, then yeah, there's going to be a spotlight on these guys. And really, again, I don't want to make it out to be one position or the other. I mean, really, it's their defensive front, and to make it to bring it back specifically to this Detroit game, Jared Goff. I mean, we know anyone who's followed his career, even in passing, knows that he generally has been a guy that is way better at home than on the road. Although last year he did do better in that regard, but still he loves to play in that dome in Detroit, play indoors. And he's generally someone, and this is true of all quarterbacks, but his splits, when you're talking about being pressured compared to a clean pocket, it's night and day. I mean, you have quarterbacks like Lamar that, yeah, if you pressure Lamar, he's not as good as when you pressure or when he has a clean pocket, but Lamar still kills you against pressure. I mean, and the numbers bear that out. That's why he's one of the very best in the league. Whereas Goff is one of those guys that stands in a clean pocket, he looks like one of the very best in the league. You pressure him, he becomes one of the very worst passers in the league. So
Well,
it
that's where
speaks
D
to,
coordinators said get him off his spot,
yeah.
right?
But that's where, when you don't have Kyle Van Noy, when you don't have Nnamdi Banabike, that becomes a little more challenging because how do you do that,
You
right?
give
And
him
it's
another
not,
second and a half to think, right? Yeah.
and that's where you say, okay, well, we blitz, but then, okay, are they going to hit Gibbs on a hot route coming out of the backfield, right? Or are they
He's
going to
gonna
hit?
see that. That's the part. Disguise blitzes and this discovery of such a
Sure.
thing, and then getting to him. Who's going to get to him? Who's going to make him move, right? It's a, this, this, the whole game's about making him move tonight.
Exactly. And unlike week one, and obviously in week one, they had their issues keeping Allen contained in the pocket. They like to do that cage rush where you make him stand there, but he doesn't really have anywhere to go. The difference here is, Goff's not some, he's not going to hurt you with his legs in the way that Allen does. But if you just let him, if you're not getting home with a four-man rush or you blitz and you're not getting home with your blitz, I mean, you look at the weapons. I mean, Jameson Williams on the outside, big time speed. Amon-Ra St. Brown, one of the very best wide receivers in the league, and certainly one of the best slot receivers in the league. So that's going to be a big
Man, that
matchup.
guy's unbelievable. Like from the minute he got in the league, it's like he had
He's a
that
mid-round
weird
pick.
name and who is he and where did he come from? And like, my God, that guy.
He's excellent.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I mean,
he's one of the
and it
best.
really speaks to wide receivers in the league. We go back to Antonio Brown, who's a knucklehead or whatever, or later picks, or that everybody's not a top five draft pick from a wide receiver perspective. It is amazing how some guys hit. And I tell you what, the Zay Flowers thing from the Ravens perspective, probably as good as it's ever been for the organization. And I've seen Hollywood Brown run around on his third or fourth team, whatever it is at this point. And guys that they've tried, and yeah, I'm still Facebook friends with Mark Clayton. You know what I mean? Like I like Travis Taylor, but having a guy that clicks. This kid for the on the other end of what they had with Megatron for all those years, right?
Yeah, no question. And I mean, so they have two really good wide receivers there. I mean, they've got some other guys that, Raymond's not a stiff. They have a good tight end in Laporta. And as I said, I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs, whether you're talking about him getting to the edges, getting an open space, his ability to catch passes out of the backfield, that the other element when we think about Matabike and Van Noy, you think about the pass rush, but you also think about how are you playing against the run. And when you're talking about younger edge guys, and the guy that we haven't mentioned that I want to mention, and especially in case he steps up tonight, Aeneas Peebles, a sixth-round rookie who, is this weird under, not, I don't want to say he's weird, but the body type is weird in the sense that he's this undersized guy playing defensive tackle. Not really a guy that you're going to want on the field to stop the run a whole lot. Not to say that his effort isn't there, but he's just undersized. But, he could be part of the equation of how you're trying to collectively fill the void of a Nnamdi Matabike not being out there. But the problem is when you think about these younger players in terms of, all right, you want to pressure Jared Goff, you want to pressure Jared Goff, but at the same time, you need to maintain your run fits. And you have a Detroit team that will run the heck out of the football if you let them. So, this is a challenge. I think you could tell. I mean, and believe me, on the flip side, I have my doubts about Detroit's ability to slow down the Ravens. So, but I think you can tell, for me, Yeah, the defense bounced back against Cleveland, and that was great. And but you look at the challenges with these couple injuries. I think, for me, Roquan Smith maybe played the best game of his Ravens career last week, but this is a step up when you're talking about Jahmyr Gibbs and Montgomery and Laporta at tight end. It's going to be a challenge. This is why you pay Roquan the big bucks, to not allow Jahmyr Gibbs to wreck the game. He's going to make plays, but you can't have him take a pass in the flat and he goes 75 yards for a touchdown because he's capable of doing that. So, this is not the matchup where you want to be down a couple players on the defensive side that are as pivotal as Madubuike and Van Noy can be. So that's where, hey, Zach Gore, you've got to call a great game. The secondary needs to cover and cover at a high level. They're going to have to be creative with how they scheme up some pressure because, especially not having Madubuike. I mean, when you have Madubuike and Travis Jones takes on the double teams, and then Madubuike gets a one-on-one, he wins that one-on-one. Who are there other individuals that are going to win one-on-ones? And that's a big question
Well, that's
for
why you
this
pay
front.
guys $25 million,
Yeah,
right? I mean, literally.
exactly.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. We're getting ready for football. If you're on the WNST text service, you'll get it first. It's all brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. I'm wearing my Curio Wellness gear here. We are down to number two and number one on our tastiness tour. I've stretched this thing out into football season. We're going to wind up talking some baseball and some Trevor Rogers as well as we're into the last week of baseball season, even though we're in a football mindset here. The blacks are out and the whites are out tonight and the lights are on and all the stars are out and all that. And I think this is a night where the Kyle Hamilton shine or the Marlon Humphreys or somebody gets a big pick or one of these young, corners and secondary guys they've drafted, Stark, somebody making a play. But it is this is not the way you want to go into the game health-wise. On the defensive side, let's talk offense for a minute because I think we've had the Sunday night scaries now about the Monday night scaries of what the Lions defense going to not punt like the Colts didn't punt for 2 weeks, right? You better hope that they're punting a little bit, but it feels track meaty as we sit here and talk about it, and we haven't even talked about our side of the track is when the Ravens have the ball. What does that mean, and how can the Lions be better than they were 2 years ago? When they were new to this thing of being a good football team and having expectations, and they had the big injury last year and all that. But all that being said, the Lions, if they're going to be taken seriously, they're a 4.5 point underdog. Madubuike is not there, so they're going to have the ability to score some points. They scored 52 last week. So we're thinking, well, they're good for 24, 26, 28, 31. Where are the Ravens going to be in this and the Ravens offense? And you mentioned injuries. We talked about Madubuike. One of the holdovers, I've been thrown out for 4 years now, so I don't know a lot of it. I've never met more than half the guys on this team by far. One of the holdovers is Pat Ricard, the other main event of my time there, along with Mike Flynn. And where they are with him. And I think for this offense right now, we talk so much about the offensive line play and the guards and where they are. Home game, NFC, bright lights, black jerseys, let's go. Lamar's good. Week three, Chiefs, short rest, all of that. I'd like to think that I don't want to say they're good for 40 on Monday night, but they should think they're good for 40 on Monday night.
I mean, you'd like to think good for 30 at least, right? I mean, I think it's a lot to keep asking them to score 40 plus points, the way they did the first 2 weeks. But you'd like to think you can score points and score at a high rate. And I think they will. I think one thing that came out of, as far as my impressions coming out of all the Sunday action is that Cleveland defense is legit. I mean, you saw what they did against the Green Bay Packers. I mean, look, Browns had a great win. Wasn't because of Joe Flacco on the offense. Let's just call a spade a spade. That Browns defense came up big time with a late turnover and all that.
When they kicked the
But
field goal, and I'm like, well, at least they scored,
yeah, right. Exactly.
That's
Exactly.
where I was.
It,
Everybody's gone. There's just Packers
yeah.
fans there taunting the Browns.
Yeah. But they get that late pick, sets up a, puts them, what, at the 4 yard line or whatever it was. And then just, I mean, just craziness. I mean, it's funny, just in general, Sunday, and I saw early Monday morning, Adam Schefter put out a tweet at, It was about the number of games that came, where the game-winning score came within the last few minutes, and it was the most since the merger or whatever it was. But it was also funny watching that NFL Sunday in real time. There was also a lot of really bad football on Sunday. Watching Red Zone, I'm like, what am I watching here with some of these games?
Well,
But
it's just bad teams. I mean, the Saints are horrible. The Titans are
there were a
horrible.
lot of have-nots, there's no doubt. But yeah, there were seven games on Sunday that featured the game-winning score in the final 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. That's the most in a single day since the merger. But there were a lot of really bad games as well. But to bring it back to the Ravens and what you mentioned about the offense, I think the one thing that you come out of Sunday just as an observer thinking is, okay, how the Ravens offense scuffled against Cleveland in that first half last Sunday, that's way more forgivable now, having seen what they did against the Packers as well. That Cleveland defensive line, I mean, and it's not just Garrett. I mean, it's the rest of that defensive line. I mean, Garrett's the headliner, obviously, but they're tough. So I will say this. Yes, the Lions do have a healthy Aiden Hutchinson back after he missed most of last season with that ugly, ugly injury, with his leg. But, this is still not a Cleveland front, or this is not a Detroit front seven that is going to, on paper, pose quite as many problems. That said, we've talked about it. We talked about it a few days ago. We'll continue to talk about it. The Ravens do need better from these guards, and they need better from their offensive line in general. I mean, they, for as well as the offensive line played at times against Buffalo, and they played very well through the first three quarters, there was also the end of the game where that offensive line really let down against Buffalo in crunch time. And then they just struggled. They kind of struggled all day against the Browns. Now, Lamar got away because Lamar is apt to do that, and but they didn't run the ball at all. So you want to see a bounce back performance in that way. But that said, this is a Lions defense that is still waiting to have a couple guys come back that are on the PUP list from all the injuries they had last year that, if you recall, as the season went on, just gutted that defense. So they're still not at full strength anyway. Marcus Davenport, their starting edge rusher, who's I don't think is a great player, but he's a starter and someone that they're counting on nonetheless. He's out. So yeah, they have Hutchinson, and yeah, they have DJ Reader at defensive tackle. And you still have to watch out for Brian Branch in the secondary, whether he's playing nickel, whether he's playing safety. He's a heck of a player. But I still look at that defense, and you kind of go back to the NFC thing, right? I wrote about it at BaltimorePositive.com. There are so many stats that we hear about the wonder and the amazement that Lamar Jackson creates, right? Because of how great of a player he is. And there are a lot of arbitrary stats where just because of how unique he is, you'll just hear it thrown out there and you'll say, oh, okay, I've never thought about that, but all right. But I still think you go back to that stat that the Ravens are 24-2. And one of those two losses was Philadelphia last December, who, oh, yeah, went on to win the Super Bowl. So it tells you what kind of defense they were, what kind of team they were. But Ravens are 24-2 in games Lamar started against NFC opponents. I think that encapsulates so well in terms of how unique he is and how much more difficult it's always difficult. I mean, Cleveland, Jim Schwartz will tell you, even when they have success, Pittsburgh will tell you, even when they have success, it's still really, really, really difficult playing Lamar Jackson and this offense. But it's so much more difficult when you just don't see it very often. And there really aren't any comps. It was interesting. We didn't mention it because it was just kind of a little more of a factoid than anything else. The Lions actually brought in Malik Cunningham last week, who had been with the Ravens, was playing wide receiver, went to Louisville, friends with Lamar, all that. They brought him in this past week on their practice squad, at least in part, to kind of pick his brain, maybe give them a practice squad look, to do some of the things Lamar does, but no one does the things Lamar does. So I still think ultimately that ends up being the difference. I think this is going to be a high scoring game. I mean, you could check out my 12 Ravens thoughts and my prediction at BaltimorePositive.com. I picked a Ravens 31-27 win, but when you're talking about a game like that, and especially on the heels of everything we saw around the league on Sunday, Is there a big defensive play? Is there a big play in the kicking game? I mean, my goodness, the number of blocked field goals, the number of made big field goals that we saw on Sunday. When you're talking about a game like this between two heavyweight offenses, and I think they're, not saying the Ravens won't have a heavyweight defense at some point, but until we see that come together in a complete effort, there's questions. There's certainly questions about Detroit's ability to stop the Ravens. So I think this. It may not be 41-40 like Detroit or like Buffalo was a couple weeks ago, but this could be one of those games where you say the first to 34 wins or the first to five touchdowns wins. I mean, it could be that kind of game. So I like the Ravens, but man, you talk about the kicking game and all those other things that can come into play when you're talking about a close game, and should be fun, but certainly a lot riding on this one. You don't want to be 1-2 and going to Kansas City, even if the Chiefs look very much, relatively speaking, a mess right now compared to what you think of them normally being. But you want to get this win. And then to your point, it is a short week and you need to turn the page. And yet you do have that challenge of going to Arrowhead. So, but all eyes on Monday night. And to your point, the black jerseys and all that, the crowd, it's going to be fun. But certainly a big time matchup here and a team that's more than capable of winning on the road if you're not going to come out and play your best.
Track meet downtown tonight at the Purple Palace. Luke Jones will be on the scene. He is Baltimore Luke. We'll have you covered with our WNST tech service, which is, I think, which alarmed me on Friday when I was on the road about Matt Abike. So certainly we've discussed that at length. Luke's got his looks at the game. We got a lot of Maryland Crab Cake Tour residue that I threw up at Baltimore Positive earlier over the weekend as well. We do have a short week in the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to talk a lot of football. Take a break. Come back. We'll talk a little bit more about what happened on Sunday in preparation for Monday night and the short week and a little evaluation maybe of John Harbaugh's little brother. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.